Hi, I'm Joe Gorman, and I teach practical theology here at NNU. I just finished my 6 years, so I am happily going to be accepting the offer of a sabbatical this fall. So this summer I'm trying to finish up a book on soul care, which is where a lot of this grew out of, and the strategies that I talk about here, basically each of the chapters. I have committed myself more than once that I'm finishing the book by the end of summer. I'm a little over halfway through, and hopefully, if it's finished by the end of summer, then it can be published in time for General Assembly. But then for sabbatical, I'm going to go teach in Portugal for a couple weeks, and Italy for a couple weeks, and then one of the other things I do is you have various projects. In Africa, we just opened a medical clinic in Ghana, so I'm going to go spend 3 weeks in Ghana and a couple weeks in Congo. And it may not sound very resting, but there's the pace is at a much slower level than it is here. And for me, it's this is like visiting family. The family that I like to hang out with. Not the family that's draining and taxing and. It's like, why are we still here? But this whole topic of healthy churches, healthy families, healthy pastors is near and dear to my heart personally, because right about 20 years ago I went through a clinical depression when I was a pastor of a local church between years 5 and 6. Which is typically between years 5 and 7, pastors tend to go through some kind of burnout and depression. We may not always recognize it as such. For me, it took me a long time to be able to admit it to myself, let alone admit it to my wife and to my church. And when I The Sunday that I began to talk about my depression with my church, I really thought that was the moment my ministry would end. That after that, they wouldn't respect me. They would think, well, what do we have to learn from him? But actually, the very opposite happened. And had people come up to me after that service who were saying, well, Pastor, I've been on an antidepressant medication for weeks and or months and years, even some of them said, and there was just this line of people who came up to me after the church service, and I just thought I had a church full of overly depressed people. But after a while, I learned that that's pretty normal. That there are anywhere from 10 to 20% of people who are either clinically depressed or maybe experience what's called dysthymia, sort of depression, sort of Eeyore syndrome, just everything's kind of gray and blah, but life, is just pretty flat and gray, not many peaks. So that has become sort of a life journey for me, both journeying, for my own health and wholeness, but yet also, I found that, my journey and my story has been really helpful to other people as well. And I've found that we in the church, we don't do a real good job of integrating holiness and health. And in our Wesleyan tradition, John Wesley was so amazing at this, that he, as an Anglican priest, part of his training that he received was medical training. And in the 18th century, modern medicine was just beginning. So even in London, what medicine there was wasn't all that great. Oftentimes it caused more harm than helped. But in the rural areas, the pastor really was, cared for souls, both spiritually, physically, and mentally. So Wesley, I'll talk about it in a minute, wrote a little book called Primitive Physic that helped people with low-cost remedies for illnesses that could be treated with available low-cost items that might be, that would especially be available to the poorest of the poor. Wesley has a lot to say to us in that area, and we'll get to that, but just thought begin by asking ourselves, how alive am I? Right now in this hot room, just feeling, just really like to lay down and take a nap. But how alive am I? How full or how empty, is my tank? And, if you're like me, it ebbs and flows. I think I've learned over the years not to get all the way to E. But I think it's good to ask ourselves and to be sensitive to how is our fuel tank doing? Are we at the end of our rope? Are we excessively drinking coffee and drinking all kinds of energy drinks? I mean, it's amazing, the energy drink industry. What a great combination of sugar and caffeine and who knows what other chemicals, go into those. But along with that, to ask, what breathes life into me? What breathes life into me? What activities, practices, relationships, people, that when I do those or I'm around those kind of people, I just feel my inner reservoir begin to fill up. And especially for those of us who are, Christian leaders, pastors, lay people, we do a really good job at caring for others, but not so good at caring for ourselves. That we tend to think everybody else matters except for us. And as we'll see in a little bit, Jesus, I think, had a perfect rhythm of engagement and withdrawal, and his life gives me permission to care for myself, to leave a lot of things undone, because there will always be things to do, people in need. But, none of us can be all things to all people. Even Jesus wasn't. And that is one of the beautiful things about the incarnation, is he was fully God, but also fully human. And I think we take his divinity seriously, but what we tend to maybe neglect is his humanity. That he got tired. He got sad, just like we do, that he needed to sleep. He needed to eat good food. He needed exercise. So yeah, what brings you joy? I'll just say this: when the joy level in our life is low, that is when we're most vulnerable to temptation. When the joy level is low, it's really easy to feel discouraged, even angry. And sometimes pastors can get angry at their congregations because they feel the congregation is taking all their energy from them and they don't have any time to care for themselves. And, pastors can become, maybe not inwardly, or maybe not outwardly, but inwardly, we're just seething. And that current of anger and frustration is just sort of under the surface of things. Well, as I mentioned, John Wesley had this little book, Primitive Physic, and it was primitive in the sense of trying to get back to the primitive church, pristine, pure. He believed, that God could restore us to a pre-fall state, that the curse of sin could be reversed. And he believed that Genesis 1 and 2 held primacy over Genesis 3. And this little book, this was the most widely circulated of all of Wesley's books. So you think of all of his sermons and everything else. This little book stayed in print until the 1880s. And during his lifetime, there were 23 separate editions, and he wrote the last revisions a year before he died. And this book also, it was not completely unique, but it was unique in the sense of how much it cost, because this went for 1 shilling. And there was a similar book that was available at the time that sold for 6 shillings. So it was just really, really important to make these insights available to the poorest of the poor for for Wesley. And one of the things I take from Wesley is that holiness, understood as wholehearted love of God and neighbor, that leads to the flourishing of our entire lives. You know, it's not just this little slice of spirituality over here, but it's our mind, it's our body, it's our emotions. You know, God created us as multidimensional, multifaceted beings, and that's good. And if all of that is good, then you know, part of our call to love God and serve others is to care for ourselves, even to love ourselves. And we'll talk about that in a minute, because I think we're all pretty squeamish when it comes to talking about that. But I really believe that God cares about both holiness and health, that these are two sides of the same coin. And Wesley often in his writings will combine holiness, health, and happiness. And I hear some Christians, even in our days, kind of poo-poo happiness. Well, happiness, you know, it comes from, you know, the root meaning, you know, hap, you know, circumstance. And so it's fleeting, you know, and joy is really what we're after. And I don't disagree with the joy thing. But I guess I want to reclaim happiness as well, because certainly for us as Wesleyans, they're all integrated with each other, that when you're holy and healthy, you're going to be happy. And if you're happy and full of joy, then you're going to be better able to, you know, share that happiness and that joy, that there will be these rivers of living water, you know, that spill out of us into the lives of others. So, you know, it's a win-win for everybody. And I really do believe that the greatest gift that we can give, you know, to God, to each other, to our churches and our families, is a healthy us. Because I'm a way better husband, a way better father when I'm, you know, healthy, when I'm rested. When I'm not rested, you know, I'm impatient and cranky. And sometimes I tell people, you know, if we would just get another hour of sleep a day, you know, we'd be a whole lot more loving. You know, we really would. But we tend to disparage sleep as something we only do, you know, if we have to. I remember... What's that?
Like it's an interruption.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I remember, you know, Dan and Scott and I went to NNC together, and I remember, you know, hearing, you know, John Wesley, you know, he got up at 4 o'clock every morning, and I thought, well, I can't quite do four, maybe I can do five, and I'd go to the prayer chapel, you know, down at the end of our dorm room and pray, and, you know, so I'd fall asleep, you know, most mornings, but I was there. But I would have been much better off sleeping probably a couple more hours. So holiness is holistic. You know, it's Christ transforming every dimension of our lives, you know, mind, body, spirit, our relationships. And Wesley brings this together, and one of my favorite quotes of his... This comes from a letter he wrote to a friend of his. It will be a double blessing if you give yourself up to the great physician, that he may heal soul and body together, and unquestionably, this is his design. He wants to give you both inward and outward health. So that whenever there's inward health, it works its way outwardly, just like he talks about inward and outward holiness. You know, that... You know, it doesn't do us or anybody any good if we just keep all this on the inside. But it does start there for sure. And then something I found just a couple weeks ago, and I'm not going to stick to Wesley too much longer, so those of you who are maybe a little bit adverse to too much history, you know that the practical stuff is coming along. But I think it's just really helpful to know that the DNA of our Wesleyan tradition includes this emphasis on health right along that of holiness. But I don't know whenever, I don't think I've ever heard a sermon on health, except maybe one coming out of my own mouth, but I haven't heard them from other pastors. But just a couple weeks ago, for doing some research, I was reading Wesley's sermon, Original Sin, and he uses this incredible phrase, soul therapy, you know, therapeia psuche, you know, so psuche we get from, you know, psychology. It's God's method of healing a soul which is thus diseased. Hereby the great physician of souls applies medicine to heal this sickness, to restore human nature totally corrupted in all its faculties. So he talks about God's whole process of salvation and sanctification, of being like a soul therapy. It's a healing of the wounds and from the ravages of sin. And Wesley sees this as affecting not only our spirit, but our soul. You know, our soul understood more holistically. And the Hebrew word for soul is nephesh. And so Adam and Eve became nephesh, living souls, and other animals and everything else. We're all nephesh. In fact, in Exodus 3:17, perhaps, when it talks about God resting from creating the Sabbath, maybe that's 5. But in any case, it says that God was refreshed. Well, in the Hebrew, it's nephesh. So it's so it literally means God was re-souled. He was re-nephished, which is an incredibly tremendous thing. Even though we hear the music coming down the hallway, it might be better just keep the door open so we have a little more air. I think in a minute they may break out singing, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, soul therapy, and I think this plays really well in our culture too, because our culture understands what therapy is. And you know, it's not just psychological therapy, but it's the healing for our entire lives. And that's one of my passions too, is I really believe this dual emphasis on holiness and health can really help us as churches in reaching out to our communities, you know, that we can offer perhaps some cooking classes, some health classes, not diet classes. I really believe diet is a four-letter word, and we need to not use that, because it's lifestyle eating. You know, it's just some little nudges in the right direction. I also find that all of us have a certain aversion to loving ourselves. In fact, as I was writing the Soul Care book, I was I didn't originally intend to write a chapter on self-love, but the more I got into it, I thought, you know, I really need to do that. And so I have this chapter called Love Yourself as Your Neighbor. And if we don't love ourselves, you know, in an agape, you know, Christ-like sort of way, how can we possibly love other people? Because, you know, I'm sure you've heard of that book title from years ago, Hurt People, Hurt People. And when we feel bad, we're not pleasant to be around. But when we're healthy, we're vigorous, we're full of life, you know, people like to bump up against us because just some of whatever is bubbling out of us might just spill into their lives. So love yourself as your neighbor. Of course, I mean, you know, Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself, as one like yourself. And in the 3rd century, St. Anthony said, one who loves one's neighbor loves God, and one who loves God loves his or her own soul. That's just so beautiful. But notice, you know, Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself, not instead of yourself. So love your neighbor as yourself, not instead of yourself, but alongside of yourself. You know, that we are the beloved, you know, daughters and sons of God. You know, that God loves us. You know, he cherishes us, that he created us good, and that he wants us to flourish. Be full of, you know, joy. You know, think of the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace. You know, and those three. And then you have patience, because if you don't have love, joy, and peace, you're not going to have any patience. But I think Paul had some kind of an order that he was working in. But that's another topic. Soul care, as I understand it, the soul therapy, it's a means of grace. You know, just like prayer, communion, worship, scripture reading. You know, Wesley, if you're familiar with him, you know, he had his Prudential and Institute of Means of Grace, and you know, then he had the Works of Piety and Works of Mercy that went along with, you know, caring for others, certainly as a means of grace. But I would want to say, well, caring for ourselves is a means of grace, because Wesley also talks about do good and do no harm. And doing good also involves doing good to us, because if we don't do good to us, we'll end up doing harm to others. You know, even if we can't love ourselves as a good in and of itself, at least we can love ourselves as a means to being more effective and available to others. And caring for ourselves is also a stewardship issue. And you know, God gave us these minds, these bodies to care for, certainly in 1 Corinthians, you know, Paul says, don't you know? You know, because they were living in such a way, he needed to remind them, don't you know that your bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit who is in you, you know, whom you have received from God? You're not your own. You know, you were bought at a price. You know, the precious blood of Christ. Therefore, honor God with your bodies. And that isn't meant to be a legalistic thing. You know, it's not meant to be you know, a burden. But it's, to me, it's a real gracious invitation. You know, it's grace. It's mercy. You know, it's not about, well, don't dance, drink, or go with guys or girls who do. But it's about God gave us these wonderful bodies, and they come in all sizes, shapes, and forms, and a lot of different, you know, gene pools. But they're still gifts from God. Well, what about Jesus? What was the rhythm of his life like? Arch Hart, who taught for many years at Fuller Seminary, and he was my dissertation mentor, he said, the same Jesus who said, go ye into the world and preach the gospel, also said, come ye apart and rest a while. You know, that we get that great commission down, but we also forget that, you know, come ye apart and rest a while. That is it's equally as important as the great commandment and the great commission. And it may sound a little heretical to you to say that, you know, soul care, you know, exercise and sleep and healthy eating, that those are as important as prayer and Bible study, but I really think they are. And they're just, we can't divide them from each other, but that's typically what we do. You know, you think of Jesus, you know, we couldn't, you know, different ones tried to rip apart his humanity and his divinity, but those were heresies. You think of Gnosticism, you know, that denied matter and said only the spirit is good, you know, that the body, you know, either we need to flagellate it and beat it into submission, you know, or we just experience everything that we possibly can with it. But, you know, the body and the spirit are all good. Vance Havner, yeah, if you don't come apart, you will come apart.
You know, that statement there reminds me of the Sabbath rest.
Yes.
Now, God determined the land was going to get the Sabbath rest, even if it meant taking his children into captivity.
Yep.
So, I think probably not too far of a stretch to say there's a parallel.
No, I agree with you that the land, our bodies, yeah, they will get their Sabbath rest one way or the other. And a little later on, Wayne Mueller, in his book From Sabbath, he says that sometimes our illnesses, our cancer, our heart attacks, you know, that's our Sabbath. That's not the road you want to travel. Yeah, not at all. And then up here, making peace with the land, God's call to reconciliation with creation. It's written by Norman Wiersbe and Fred Bonson. Wiersbe, he's a professor at Duke Divinity School, and he's written a lot on food and Sabbath, and just a great, great writer. You read him? No? But so that, yeah, I think goes along with what you're saying as well. And something that strikes me as fascinating, another thing that's very fascinating to me is, how could Jesus, as the Son of God, with all the people he had coming to him, that they were constantly clamoring for his attention, that they, that there were people with disabilities, there were people with all kinds of physical maladies, and how could Jesus just take off and go out by himself? Shouldn't he have been available 24/7 to people? But yet, what do we find him doing? Yeah, he's just always taken off. It's like, well, where's Jesus? I don't know. Yeah, there he is, asleep, on the boat. It's like, I'm sure you've all preached on that one too. Jesus asleep in the boat of our lives, kind of a thing. And that Jesus apparently had enough free time that he walked around and considered the birds of the air. Both Luke and Matthew include this, but consider. I think it's a present active indicative or imperative in Greek, so it's a command. Consider, go on considering. I don't know, Dave, you can maybe correct me. Did you bring your Greek Bible? Oh, there you go. Okay. Jesus also, consider the lilies of the field. So I take these two verses as complete justification for backpacking as much as I possibly can in the summer. They're not the only verses, but it maybe helps me feel like they're a little more redemptive, because sometimes I still do suffer from a little bit of false guilt. But I love hiking and backpacking, both because it's a physical sort of thing, embodied thing. And actually, years ago, when I was still a pastor of a local church in Golden, Colorado, I started going on monthly retreats. Well, most of these retreat houses that I stayed at were up in the forest. And so there were different trails you could hike on. And for a long, it took me a while to figure things out, but at first I would just sit in the chapel and pray or journal or read, and then I'd fall asleep. Then I started going out and, there's trails and things that you can hike on, and that helped me to stay awake. And so then I thought, maybe I could just backpack as sort of a spiritual retreat. And, it's a mobile temple sort of thing, I guess. So that's what I try and do now, because I find that I am so vulnerable to various distractions. If I stick around the office or stick around the house, it's only when I get out in creation that I truly can unplug. And I literally can just sense my inner reservoir filling back up. And I can feel kind of the mess, the jumble in my head beginning to untangle itself. And I'm not saying everybody needs to do that, but whatever does that for you, you need to do that as often as you possibly can. And I realize that we all deal with less than perfect circumstances. So there really is no such thing as a balanced life. There really is not such a thing as a balanced life. It's very dynamic. It's always ebbing and flowing. We're always working at it. It's an unfinished project. Maybe we have a season of life that's balanced. But you think of like a mother of a newborn baby. Does she live a balanced life? From what I've heard, no. So just in case you guys are wondering, that's no, right? Ladies, yeah. And you just think of students. When you're a full-time student and you're struggling to finish up school, your life isn't very balanced. So sometimes we just need to hang on for a certain season of our life. But I really believe that Jesus did not neglect his needs for rest, food, prayer, silence, and solitude, even though he had endless demands on his time. That Jesus, did he, deny himself? Yeah. Because he fasted, but he did not neglect himself. And I think that's crucial, because sometimes people will say, well, should we not deny ourselves? Well, yes, but not neglect ourselves. And I think those are huge differences. And sometimes people will say, they even talk of the self as if it's a bad thing. When And Thomas Merton talked about the true self and the false self, and the false self is the self, you know, that's wounded by sin, and then, you know, the true self is that self, you know, that we are created in God's image, you know, that's that self that we as Wesleyans don't believe was obliterated by sin, but it was wounded, and but God intends to restore that. Soul care is also vital to Christian discipleship. And what I mean by that is, I really hope that in our churches, and I'm seeking to figure out how to do this in my own ministry as a layperson in a local church now, preaching occasionally, teaching occasionally. What does it mean for, you know, the teaching ministry of the church, or even our evangelism to local communities? But if we take a holistic approach to discipleship, you know, I think we'll have great opportunities to reach out to our community, maybe offering cooking classes or, you know, blood draws, you know, health screening sorts of things. All right, so here are some strategies. One of the most helpful things for me is practicing a Sabbath rhythm in my life. And it used to be that whenever anybody brought up Sabbath, I always felt guilty. You know, it's because I knew I wasn't doing very well at that. And I'm still on the way. I'm still trying to do better at it. There's one author I read, he says, view Sabbath moments as sort of a seventh inning stretch in your life. You know, for those of you who like baseball, you know, maybe you can connect with that. And I don't always do so well in practicing Sabbath all in one chunk, but I do much better at Sabbath moments, you know, that are interwoven throughout my week. And even when I was a pastor of a local church, my wife worked Monday through Friday. And so it really didn't work for me to have, you know, a separate day off from her. And so then I began to, you know, I'd take a little bit of Sabbath here, a little bit of Sabbath there. And so taken as a total, I had it, but not just one day. And here I'm reminded that Jesus said that Sabbath was created for human beings. You know, human beings were not created for Sabbath. And I think sometimes we as Christians are a little glib with that. You know, we tend to, you know, forget, you know, the Sabbath command, you know, in the Old Testament. You know, but we strongly affirm all the other commandments, but we tend to neglect that one. I don't know what has changed, and, you know, we don't affirm murdering, but, you know, Sabbath observance, that was just sort of optional. But, and it's really fascinating, too, the way the Ten Commandments are laid out, is because, you know, the first three, you know, have to do with God, and, you know, the last six, you know, have to do with our relationships with others, and then you have the fourth commandment, the Sabbath, you know, that's right there in the middle. But it's this connective tissue, you know, that connects our love for God and then our love for others. So it's that loving your neighbor as yourself thing. If we loving God and loving our neighbor, right at the core of that in the Ten Commandments is Sabbath. And I think that's really crucial. You know, hourly, you know, when you're sitting in your office, you know, try and get up and move. You can set the alarm on your phone. You can drink enough water so that your bladder gets you up and gets you moving. Maybe you want to, you know, go for a walk, you know, just something to kind of get you up and moving, getting the blood flowing again in your body daily. Do something, you know, that is joy producing, something that breathes life into you. It could be reading a book, could be watching, you know, a favorite, you know, TV show, you know, at the end of the day, you know, whatever it might be, you know, working in your garden, your yard, you know, I don't know, taking your kids swimming, whatever it may be. And then weekly, you know, something a little bit larger, more sustained. You know, I would say for me, definitely part of my daily Sabbath practices is exercise of one way, shape, or form. It's just, it's now second nature for me, and if I can't exercise in one way, shape, or form, I just get really cranky. And so, yeah, even yesterday, you know, I took off in the middle of the day because that was the only time I could work out. And so I just went over to the rec center and You know, it's just one of those non-negotiables in my life. And but it all began with a little nudge, you know, to get back into it and make that a big rock in my life. Monthly, you know, maybe you want to do something again a little more extended, and yearly, you know, again something maybe even a little bit longer. A good friend of mine and I from Denver, we've started this annual tradition of going backpacking someplace, and so this August we're gonna hike another 100 miles of the Colorado Trail. And so we've all planned for that, and he's excited to unplug, and I'm excited to do that. And it serves several functions. I mean, it's healthy. You know, it gives us something physically to look forward to, and you know, and I suppose it just reminds me, or maybe helps remind me, you know, that I may be 53, but I don't necessarily feel 53. And a yearly, I mean, certainly our vacations with our family, our loved ones certainly would fall into a yearly Sabbath, I think. And we'll talk more about that in a minute. So the second strategy is to facet your life. And here I'm thinking of play and hobbies, you know, that God has created us as these multi-dimensioned beings. And you think of the facets on a diamond here, you know, that diamonds are, you know, cut, you know, with all these facets, like 52 or something like that on a standard cut diamond. But one of the reasons for that is because these facets catch the light, you know, in a beautiful quality diamond, it looks like it's on fire. But yeah, the light is all refracted off these various angles. But if you just have one facet, you just have a mirror. Which, I mean, mirrors can be helpful, but they're, you know, nobody will pay thousands of dollars for a mirror. And so we, you know, have been wonderfully created by God with all these different dimensions to nurture and care for. And I think one of the chief ways we do that is through our play and hobbies. And there are as many ways to play and have hobbies as there are people. You know, just to find, you know, what fits you and your personality. The vet says, I need a hobby. I thought eating and sleeping were my hobbies. And, you know, it might be that's where you want to start. I don't know. Well, how on earth can play and hobbies be a means of grace? Well, let's look at this a little bit. But I really encourage you to play somehow, somewhere, every day. You know, just set aside time for it like you do eating. You know, because to me, exercise is play. It doesn't feel like work. I look forward to it. And, you know, if you need permission, I give you permission. In fact, if you need more than that, it's a spiritual discipline. You know, it sounds really hard. It sounds spiritual. That's why I really like the phrase, you know, means of grace better than spiritual disciplines. I don't like disciplines all that much. You know, they're painful. They don't feel real good. But look at it. Yeah, it's just to give yourself permission that God calls me to play. Participate in the playfulness of Trinitarian dance. You know, the Greek word perichoresis, you know, this circle of dance, you know, that the Holy Trinity is this eternal interpenetrating community of love and joy. And out of that love and joy, God created all that there is. And we're created in that image. So we're created in the image of the joyful, loving God. And certainly it embraces the incarnation. But some of the more practical things it does is it declutters the mess, unravels the tangle of our minds, helps us manage stress, or work on breathing and heart rate variation. Something my wife and daughter and I started doing about a year ago is doing yoga. And I just thought, you know, yoga's for wimps. But I read this book on post-traumatic stress disorder because my daughter has a lot of physical challenges, and it really has had a PTSD effect on her. And so I was reading this book, and I ended up reading several books, and they each mentioned yoga. So I thought, oh, well, this is something that would be really good for her. And then Shelley and I decided, you know, if we're going to try and encourage her to do this, then we ought to go along as well. And we love it as much as Annie does when Annie is able to go. But it, you know, as much as I, you know, lifted weights and did other stuff, you know, yoga really kicked my rear end. And it's hard. But, I've had some sort of back issues and, you know, but since I've been doing yoga, you know, that's much better. Just, you know, core strength. And you just start where you are. The other day, yeah, I forget, we're doing some kind of pose and I got all kind of tangled up in myself and I just, boom, I just fell over a clump on my side and our yoga teacher, you know, we've been in her class for a year now and she just busted out laughing and she says, Joe, you just made my day. And, you know, it was pretty funny just be able to laugh at yourself. And, so in yoga, you know, it's not this new age weird thing. All ours is just stretching. Yeah. But yeah, hobbies and play can create these new neural connections. You know, they promote brain plasticity, you know, this flexibility of mind. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and this guy said after he read something, he said it was as if these two synapses that had never met in my brain before shook hands. And I love that imagery. And I think, you know, play, you know, hobbies, they do that. You know, they make these connections in our brain that might not have otherwise happened. And possibly, you know, the research is still being done. You know, it can help prevent Alzheimer's or at least, you know, forestall it and, you know, different, you know, brain decline sorts of things. And certainly play and hobbies renew our soul. They heal us. They help us to develop emotional resiliency, you know, kind of like a shock absorber in our life. Because you just think, when I'm fatigued or I'm stressed, I feel all the bumps. You know, it can be a rough ride. It's like every little thing I sense and I feel. But, you know, if I'm really full, you know, my inner reservoir is full, then I absorb those, kind of like, whatever, that's okay. But when I'm running on empty, I tend to be much more sensitive to things. So here to ask, you know, ourselves, where are the threads of play and joy in our life? You know, to find hobbies and opportunities to play that feed our soul. And hopefully whatever our role in our churches is, you know, that we can invite others into that as well. Third one is, you know, your duty cycle, you know, your bandwidth, accept your limitations. You know, bandwidth, duty cycle are two different metaphors that are really helpful for me here. And I'm no machine expert, but refrigerators have duty cycles. You know, they're not meant to be on all the time. You know, that they're on for a while, then they're off. You know, they're on for a while, then they're off. So if your refrigerator is running all the time, that means it's probably near the end. And similar for us, you know, sort of this Sabbath, rhythm. You know, we engage for a while, then we withdraw for a while. And each of us have different duty cycles. You know, my wife, she's very much kind of a racehorse. You know, she gets, I think, more done in an hour than I do in a day. But I just kind of plod along and, you know, I eventually get things done. You know, I'm just more of that tortoise. And it's okay to be who we are. And I think most of us spend an entire lifetime learning to love and accept ourselves just as we are. And if we can get to that point where we're comfortable in our own skin and, you know, we can accept ourselves, warts and all, I mean, that's a beautiful place to be. But it's not easy. And bandwidth, you know, we're all familiar with that. You know, everything that we do in our life has a bandwidth tax. You know, that, you know, maybe some of you were on internet when it was still the 14.4 kilobytes per second thing, you know, and now I saw that my cable company is offering up to 1 gigabyte per second downloads, which is just, you know, crazy to think of the exponential increase in bandwidth that's available to us. But each of us have a limited amount of bandwidth. And I think by caring for ourselves, we can maybe, keep it wide, or by not caring for ourselves, we shrink it a little bit. But to be aware of where does my bandwidth go? Because some things are little. You'll go into the grocery store, you know, that doesn't cause a whole lot of bandwidth. But if we have a disagreement with someone, I mean, that is a huge amount of bandwidth. You know, a huge part of our brain is going toward that. And that's all we can think about. And when that happens, when we have a huge tax on our bandwidth, what we tend to do is we tunnel. You know, we get focused only on the urgent. You know, and we forget the important. You know, the important falls outside of that tunnel. And I don't think we can ever completely avoid that, but if we can be aware of that, I find it really helpful. And for me, I've it's been helpful for me to think about the various activities of my life and what they cost in terms of my bandwidth, and to reflect on, is the bandwidth that it takes for me to do this or be in relationship with this person, is it worth it? Because there is only so much of me and you to go around, and that's all part of accepting our limits and knowing what our duty cycle is. You know, I find that my bandwidth, it varies over the day. You know, that in the mornings, you know, that's when I'm, I think, most creative, most energetic. You know, usually after lunch, you know, we're not quite as excited and energetic. But you all are. I can see that. but to do those activities that require a lot of bandwidth, you know, when our bandwidth is widest, and you know, whether it's sermon preparation or you know other kinds of things, I have really tried to train myself. I don't check my email until in the afternoon. I don't always do that. Sometimes I get caught up in that, and I think, oh, I should check to see if so-and-so responded this to this, or I'll think, oh, I know, well, I'll just know that there are dozens of emails out there, and people are thinking, why isn't he responding? And so I worry about what other people think about me way too much. And we got to let that go so that we can accomplish, you know, the main things that God has called us to accomplish. So anyway, hopefully maybe that can be a helpful image for you. Get adequate sleep. You know, and this varies for all of us, but I would say almost all of us need 8 hours of sleep a night. And we typically sleep in about hour and a half sleep cycles. So, you know, 7.5, you know, would be up on that sleep cycle pattern. But generally, you know, it takes, you know, a few minutes to go to sleep. Sometimes we wake up in the middle of the night. You know, now that I have a little watch, you know, that tracks my sleep. Yeah, usually it says, yeah, it's about half an hour, you know, is devoted to, you know, either waking up or, you know, getting settled down to actually go to bed. But 7.5 hours, and, you know, there are many people who need 9 hours of sleep. And you know, if you are one of those who needs 9 hours of sleep, get that 9 hours of sleep. Don't feel guilty about it. And it's just, it's really, really important to you and for those that you love. And hopefully you have those in your life who are supportive. Because I've heard different ones whose spouse even kind of ridicules them for their need for sleep. And to me, that's just really sad, because it's not being lazy. You know, John Wesley, he said most people only needed about 6 hours of sleep. You know, he said that sleeping too long makes you flabby and makes you ill, But different studies they are doing show that people who do sleep excessively have all kinds of other health issues, sometimes mental health issues. So, you know, sleeping too much, I mean, that would be maybe 10, 12, 14 hours, you know, not 9 hours. You know, it's symptomatic of other things, you know, that are going wrong. And, you know, it's not laziness. And I, yeah, please.
I had a comment. You know, I see the picture of the baby up there. Children laugh so much more than we adults do. I mean, they're smiling and laughing all the time. How can we do that? How can we get back to being, having the joy of a child?
Yeah, and that's exactly what we need to recover.
Yeah.
Is, and I think part of that is affirming play. That play is not trivial. You know, that it's part of what God's called us to do. I don't know, was it last summer? I think I was in our driveway and somebody drove by to ask for directions, so they pulled into the driveway, and I was putting golf clubs into the back of my car, and he just pulls up and he asks for the directions, and then he makes the comment, "Well, I see you're going to go waste the afternoon." And I just thought, that was so telling. Well, even if I were going to play golf by myself, I don't see that as a waste. I was actually going to go play with my son, which is an even better thing. But play is not a waste of time. I think Jesus and the disciples were very playful with each other. You know, there have been books written on the humor of Christ, and as we are, so Jesus was. You know, Jesus was like us in every way, you know, except for sin. And just as our adrenaline levels go up when we have more stress, more serotonin's produced. And I think that was true of Jesus as well. You know, and that was partly why he needed to get away and pray, is because he needed to allow his adrenal system to recover. You know, and he was in tune with that in a way that we aren't. You know, you think of Jesus with the woman with the bleeding disorder, you know, who in the midst of the crowd touched his robe, and he sensed the power go out of him. You know, that it took power to heal. It took energy to heal. And so I think part of his getting away was kind of repowering up, filling up that internal reservoir. But yeah, just looking at kids, you know, that's a real good clue, as to the kind of lives we can live. You know, Jesus said, you know, let the little children, you know, come to me, you know, such as, you know, the kingdom is made up for such as these, and, you know, unless you become like a little child, all those things. And here's Wayne Mueller again. He says, if we do not allow a rhythm of rest in our overly busy lives, illness becomes our Sabbath, our pneumonia, our cancer, our heart attack, our accidents, and for me, our depressions create Sabbath for us. And again, you know, that's the hard way to do it. You know, don't do it the hard way. I don't recommend it. It's kind of like, we learn from the mistakes of others, but we learn best from our own mistakes, right? Which is unfortunate, but it's true. It's true. And then Wayne Mueller also says, the world aches for the generosity of a well people, aches for the generosity of a well-rested people. Because when we are well-rested, as I said, you know, we're more loving, we're more patient, we're more kind, we have more to offer other people, caring for ourselves. You know, it's not selfish. You know, here's some stress management techniques. eat, sleep. If you have never been to Randy Glassbergen's website, I really encourage you to do that. He has a whole series of these cartoons, and they're pretty funny. So how can we afford to care for ourselves in a world like this? And there's all this going on, you know, that there's still people unsaved who are in sin, apart from Christ. You know, all, you know, these deep-seated political, economic, social injustice issues. Same really as in Jesus' day. You know, but at the end of his life, Jesus said, "Father, I have completed. I have fulfilled the work that you gave me to do." You know, and it's that Greek word, you know, telos, you know, fulfillment. You know, that I have accomplished the purpose for which you have sent me. You know, that as a human being, he couldn't save, you know, the whole world at that time, but he saved it in potential. You know, and then later said that unless I go away, you know, the Holy Spirit will not come to you. So, you know, we can't save everybody either. And if we don't, you know, care for ourselves, if we don't engage in soul care, you know, we won't be able to serve our neighbor. So not engaging in soul care is not a retreat, but it's an advance. And as we care for ourselves, we're better able to respond to God's call and our neighbor's needs. And I've already mentioned this one. When we don't care for ourselves, we do harm to others. And pastors, you know, are especially notorious for caring for others and not themselves. You know, our health or lack of it has a ripple effect in the lives of others. So we get to regular exercise. You know, what fits your busy schedule better, exercising 1 hour a day or being dead 24 hours a day? So to do something every single day, you know, if you're not in the habit of it, you know, maybe start small, you know, just walk. We were created to walk, you know, and then build up. You know, if you like to swim, swim. You know, whatever it is, you know, just you know, to try and do some regular exercises. You know, they're doing studies now that show that people that exercise regularly, I think it's their telomeres, you know, in their brain are longer, which as we age, you know, they shrink, they get shorter, but people who exercise regularly have longer telomeres, so it actually helps us live, you know, longer, you know, quantitatively, but also quality of life. And I view my physical or my regular exercise as sort of my physical tithe to God, you know, that helped me at one time especially, well, still does. I don't spend 16.8 hours a week on exercise, but, you know, maybe an hour a day, you know, by the time I drive and get home, and, you know, we live 5 minutes from the rec center, so it's, you know, not too far away, but it just puts a little more bite into it for me. You know, if I view this as a physical tithe, you know, a stewardship kind of thing, gets me up and moving, although, you know, now I've just done it for so long, I don't really have to hang that over my head. Wesley said, every day of your life, take at least an hour's exercise between breakfast and dinner. If you will, take another hour before supper or before you sleep. That's 2 hours if you're counting. If you can, take it in the open air. Otherwise, in the house, if you cannot ride or walk, use a dumbbell or a wooden horse. A wooden horse was basically like a piece of wood suspended between two sawhorses. And when it was rainy and, you know, kind of crummy weather in England, like it, you know, often is, you just bounce on it, you know, do some kind of physical exercise. And if you don't have strength enough to do this for an hour at a time, do it twice or thrice. And then he says, let nothing hinder you. Your life is at stake. Make everything yield to this. And that's huge. Sorry, I'm going over here a little bit, but I'll try and finish up here in the next 3 minutes. But Wesley, you know, at 82, he was slogging through the snowy, muddy, icky streets of London to collect money for the poor, and he ended up collecting, you know, the equivalent of $30,000 in today's currency. You know, here he's 82 years old. He could have been huddled up around the warm fire, and here he is out in the muddy streets. At 87, you know, that last year of his life, he preached over 100 oral sermons, and then he wrote another 7 sermons for publication. He revised the primitive physics one more time. Just crazy. exercise, all kinds of benefits, brain, skin, blood, muscles, pancreas, lungs, weight, sexual function. Everybody should say amen to that, as long as you're married. Mood, anxiety, stress, energy, sleep, all those things. If you have a dog, people who have dogs are much more likely to go on regular walks. So if you don't have a dog, get a dog so you have something to take it for a walk. Yes. And the last one, eat more healthily. And that's a process. And I think the food we eat really is a means of grace. And I haven't always looked at it that way. If you haven't read Rick Warren's book, The Daniel Plan, I think it's the best book he's ever written. But, he has this great alliteration, faith, food, fitness, focus, friends, a lot of connections with what I'm working on. I think he had a couple, two or three other authors with him. One of them is Daniel Amen. And he's a medical doctor. He has written several other books that are really interesting. If you want to do more reading the Daniel Plan, there's DVDs and small group discussions that you can use in your church. And I'm hoping we can use in ours moving forward. For pastors, there's the Duke Clergy Health Initiative. I encourage you to check out this website. You can just go to Duke Clergy Health. Pastors have higher metabolic syndrome, twice the rate of depression as the general population, because we tend to not sleep enough, we don't exercise, and we eat crappy stuff.
What was the Duke's website?
Let's see. It's not on there, but this is what it looks like. So if you just do Duke Clergy Health, you can find it. And if you would like the PowerPoints, you can just email me up here, and I'll be glad to send those to you. And then one more website, which is really cool. It's called churchhealthcenter.org. It's based in Memphis in the inner city. And the pastor, he is both has an MDiv and an MD. So he got his MDiv from seminary, United Methodist, and then he went on and got his MD. And so he started a church and a health clinic at the same time. And then, out of this relationship, they care for all kinds of needs in a very underserved area. Very high rates of diabetes and heart disease. And so they have cooking classes, they have produced cookbooks, they've produced Lenten materials on helping people to use Lent as a time that they might want to begin to nudge their eating habits in a little different direction. But it's just fun to get on their website and wander around a little bit. So that's a great resource too.